Okay, so we're diving into Divine Kiss by Chaim Ben Torah today, and I am so intrigued by this already.
Yeah, it's quite a fascinating look at death, especially for believers, you know.
Definitely. I mean, he's not just pulling from the Bible,
You know,
though.
no. He's got Jewish traditions in here, personal stories, even quantum physics.
It's like a what a mix, a very unique blend of sources for sure.
Yeah, it is.
So, okay, what is this divine kiss then?
Well, it's Ben Torah's way of describing how a believer transitions from earthly life to eternal life with God.
Okay.
But it's not just any transition. It's marked by this overwhelming love and an absence of any pain or fear or agony.
Oh, wow.
So, like, imagine God's loving embrace as your soul leaves your physical body.
So it's not like, the clinical cold, ending we imagine.
No, not at all.
It's more like a warm, comforting hug.
Yes,
Okay,
exactly.
I like that.
And Ben Torah believes that this divine kiss, it isn't just theoretical. He argues that a lot of biblical figures, like David and Peter, experience this very joyful, peaceful transition.
That's interesting because you always hear about, the dramatic elements of their stories,
Right.
but he's saying that we might be missing a key part of it, like how their faith really shaped those final moments.
Yes, exactly. And he uses the analogy of a marriage ceremony. Think about it. All the fear and uncertainty just melts away with that first kiss,
Right.
symbolizing the beginning of a new life.
So is he saying that the divine kiss is like that first kiss? It's not the end, but a beginning.
Exactly. It's the consummation of that spiritual union with God.
Okay.
He argues that, you know, here on earth, we're in this kind of like a betrothal period with God. We're spiritually connected, but that full union, that true intimacy, comes when we leave our physical bodies.
I see. But this also raises some questions. If the divine kiss is so blissful, why are so many people even believers still afraid to die.
That's a question Ben Torah tackles as well. And he thinks it might be because we get so caught up in our earthly existence, you know,
Right.
we kind of lose that eternal perspective.
Oh, I see.
We focus on the physical separation, the loss, not that spiritual reunion.
So maybe like clinging to that fear is actually keeping us from experiencing God's love fully, even now.
It's certainly something to consider. And Ben Torah actually offers a way to bridge that gap, a way to start experiencing that divine love more fully while we're still here. And he calls it Dvekut.
Dvekut. Okay, now I'm really lost. What is that?
Well, think of it as clinging to God, like really experiencing deep communion with Him.
Okay.
It's a type of prayer, but not focused on asking for things, but just, you know, drawing closer to God, being in His presence.
Basking in his presence.
Yes, exactly.
Like that.
Ben Torah believes we can experience Dvekut, this closeness with God, in a lot of ways. And he uses a term, it's really endearing. He calls it the divine hug.
Divine hug. I like that. So it's not just an abstract concept. It's about actually feeling God's presence.
Absolutely.
Tangible, almost like a hug,
Yeah, exactly. Like a hug from a loved one. He even shares this really touching story about a bird tapping on his study partner's window. She was feeling really lonely and isolated, and this simple little act, it reminded her of God's love and care.
Ah, that is nice. It's like, yeah, God's love can show up in those really unexpected places.
Yes, it can.
Like a little nudge,
Yeah.
a reassurance. So are those divine hugs that Dvekut, are those how we prepare for the divine kiss?
That's what Ben Torah seems to think. He says the more we experience God's love in this life, the more, well, naturally we'll transition into that fullness of love and death.
Like practicing for eternity.
Yeah, learning to recognize God's presence and responding to His love in every single moment.
And Ben Torah says that even our struggles can help kindle God's love in us.
He does. He suggests that our difficulties, our pain, can draw us closer to God. And that might sound counterintuitive.
It does. It kind of goes against the whole, prosperity gospel idea.
Right. But he says, you know, those are the times when we feel most lost and alone, and often when we're most open to receiving God's comfort.
So it's about finding God in those moments, like
Yes.
allowing those moments to refine us and draw us closer to Him.
Exactly.
And that all connects back to the divine kiss.
It does. The more we experience God's love, even in the midst of pain and suffering, the more prepared we might be for that ultimate embrace.
This makes me think about all those times in my life when I've just felt so overwhelmed by God's love,
Yeah.
like during worship or prayer. Do you think those could have been like mini divine kisses?
It's certainly possible. And
Yeah.
I think Ben Torah would encourage us to really pay attention to those moments,
Yeah.
cherish them, and then seek them out intentionally.
You know, it's not about waiting for some grand mystical experience, but it's those everyday glimpses of God's love.
Exactly. Those everyday glimpses that can really shape our perspective.
On life and death and everything.
Absolutely. And this is where Ben Torah gets really interesting. He brings in all these different interpretations of biblical stories. But he sees them as more than historical accounts.
Okay.
He sees them as illustrations of this divine kiss, this merging with God's love, playing out in these different ways.
Okay, so let's dive into some of those biblical examples. Where does he start?
He starts with the story of Lazarus. You know the one, the miracle where Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead?
Okay.
Right, but Ben Torah, he focuses on something most people kind of gloss over. The language that Jesus uses about Lazarus's death.
Oh, okay.
He calls it sleep. And the word he uses in Aramaic is shakaf.
Shakaf.
Which can also mean intimacy.
So it's not just poetic. He's actually hinting at something deeper.
Yeah. Like a union with God, a taste of the divine kiss, even in death.
It's almost like falling asleep, you know, in the arms of someone you love. You're still connected. You're enveloped in their presence.
Beautiful analogy. That leads perfectly into another biblical story that Ben Torah, well, he interprets it in kind of a surprising way. The story of Nadab and Abihu.
Oh, Aaron's sons.
Yeah, they offered strange fire to God and were consumed by fire.
Right, and the usual take is that they were punished for disobeying, right?
Right. But Ben Torah, he suggests that maybe they weren't punished, but drawn into God's presence so intensely that their physical bodies couldn't handle it. Like another example of this divine kiss, but it shows how important preparation is and reverence.
So it's not just about wanting to experience God's love, but actually being ready for it.
Yes. And to explain that, Ben Torah brings in this concept of simsim. It's a little complex, rooted in Jewish mystical thought, but
I have to admit, when you first mentioned simsim, I had no idea what you were talking about.
It's okay. Imagine God in all his vastness, yeah. Right? Creating a space for us, a bubble within his being. That's simsim, the space where God, well, contracts himself so creation can exist.
So God kind of creating a safe space, a place where we can experience his love without being completely overwhelmed.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. And Ben Torah believes that we can experience little bits of simsim now, you know, in those times when we feel that deep connection with God, like a divine hug.
So this divine kiss, it's not just something passive that happens to us. We actually have a role to play in preparing for it.
That's Ben Torah's message. And he uses another biblical event to kind of show this, the transfiguration.
When Jesus appears with Moses and Elijah.
Yes. And his clothes become dazzling white.
Right. And Peter, James, and John, they witnessed it totally in awe.
Ben Torah thinks that they were given a quick glimpse into the Zimsum, like a taste of the divine realm. They were experiencing, well, a merging of the natural and the supernatural, and they were still in their physical bodies.
So it's like they got a sneak peek, a preview of the divine kiss.
Exactly. And it reinforces the idea that the divine kiss, it's not just a far-off event.
Okay.
It's something we can start experiencing now in little glimpses and flashes as we draw closer to God.
So we've talked about the Bible, we've talked about Divakit and Zimsum, but what about, are there real life stories, like modern day examples that Ben Torah uses to illustrate the divine kiss?
Oh, he shares tons of personal anecdotes. You know, one that really got to me was this story of a Catholic man. He had a near-death experience during surgery.
Oh, wow.
And he described this intense peace and joy, like instantly transported to heaven before Jesus.
Wow, that does challenge the idea of some sort of waiting period, like you're just immediately in God's presence.
Yes, exactly. And that aligns with Ben Torah's belief that the divine kiss, it's instant. The moment we leave our bodies, boom, enveloped in God's love.
Well, what about purgatory? I mean, you know, Catholics believe in purification after death. How does that fit with Ben Torah's ideas about the divine kiss?
That is a great question. And Ben Torah, he devotes a whole chapter to that, to exploring different views of purgatory. He, you know, he acknowledges that it's complicated.
He even calls it divine hug too.
He does. Like he's saying that even if there is a purification process, it's still in the end an expression of God's love.
So even if the divine kiss isn't always instantaneous, even if there are different maybe stages, the main point is that God's love is the driving force.
Absolutely. And that takes us right back to Divak, clinging to God in this life.
So how do we do that? How do we practice that, Divak? Ben Torah gives some ideas, right?
Yeah. He talks about spending time in nature, being mindful of the messages creation might be sending us, He even talks about this Jewish practice year do.
Okay.
It's all about humbling yourself before God's creation, really listening to it.
It's kind of like what we were talking about earlier with that bird. It's about those little whispers of God's love all around us.
Exactly. And Bentor really believes that creation is a testament to God's love, a constant reminder of his presence and care for us. He's got a whole chapter on how creation teaches us about the divine kiss.
So it's not just reading the Bible or going to church. It's about seeing God in the world around us.
Yeah. Finding God in, you know, the sunrise, the bird song, the way a tree bends in the wind. It's about cultivating awe and wonder.
So back to the divine kiss.
Yeah.
If creation is reflecting God's love, then death for the believer isn't the end. It's stepping into that love more fully.
It's like going from a dimly lit room to full sunlight. And the more we practice Devek, the more we attune ourselves to God's presence in life, well, the easier that transition might be.
Powerful image. I do wonder, though, Bentora talks about trials and difficulties kindling God's love in us. But what about those who suffer endlessly? Where's the divine kiss in that?
That's a tough one. And Bentora admits there's no easy answer. But he does offer a different perspective, one that might offer some comfort.
Right. He says God's love isn't always about removing our pain.
Yeah.
Or making life easy. It's about being with us in the fire, giving us strength.
And even that suffering can have a redemptive purpose, that it can refine our character.
It's hard to grasp that when you're hurting, but it does offer hope, doesn't it?
It does. Even in those dark times, God is with us,
yeah,
offering his comfort and strength.
And that's where the divine kiss comes in, even if we suffer here. That ultimate embrace, that merging with God's love, that's waiting, like the promise of a warm, loving embrace after a hard journey. This brings me back to Bentor's marriage picture analogy.
Ah, yes. He spends a lot of time unpacking that. Our relationship with God is a marriage. We're betrothed to him now, but that full consummation, that comes after death.
And he uses that image, you know, the bridegroom preparing a room for his bride.
Yeah, he connects that to what Jesus said in John 14, you know, I go to prepare a place for you. Like Jesus is the bridegroom preparing our place in God's house.
It's beautiful. It really speaks to the anticipation, the longing we should have.
We're like brides waiting,
yeah,
eagerly anticipating that union.
So how do we prepare for the wedding feast? Like, how do we cultivate that longing?
Well, Bentora talks about cultivating intimacy with God, seeking mm-hmm. his presence, learning to hear his voice. He even talks about physical intimacy, you know, within a marriage as a reflection of that spiritual intimacy with God.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he highlights the Hebrew word yichud.
Yichud.
Which is that time a newly married couple spends alone together right after the wedding.
Right. Seclusion, intimacy, deepening that bond.
Bentora says we can experience something similar with God through prayer, worship, just spending time in his presence.
It's about making space for intimacy. And, you know, he also emphasizes faithfulness, choosing to love and honor God, even when it's tough. He uses the example of Portia from Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. Do you remember how she begs Brutus to confide in her?
Yeah.
But he won't, and she feels like that violated their bond, that sacred yichud. It's a reminder that intimacy takes vulnerability, trust,
yes,
and a willingness to share ourselves deeply. And that goes for our relationship with God, too.
Absolutely.
So preparing for the divine kiss, it's not about rules. It's about cultivating a deep, personal relationship.
Yeah, marked by trust, vulnerability, and surrendering to his love.
Learning to see his presence everywhere.
And trusting. He's preparing us for that ultimate reunion.
That joyous homecoming.
Yeah.
This takes us back to Bentor's main point. The divine kiss isn't just about what happens after we die. It's about experiencing God's love so deeply that death becomes, well, irrelevant.
It's about embracing the fullness of God's love, not just in the afterlife, but here, now.
Trusting that God is working all things for good.
Even the things we don't understand.
And surrendering to that love.
Allowing it to transform us.
Speaking of transformation, Bentora has a whole chapter on Uzzah and the Ark, really diving into the mystery and power of the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah. He doesn't just tell the stories, like how the Ark supposedly carried its carriers rather than being carried.
Right.
He connects those ancient beliefs to modern science, to theories about parallel universes, alternate dimensions.
Wow, that takes things to a whole other level.
It does. It's like, the Ark is something out of science fiction, and it kind of shows how our understanding of the spiritual realm is always evolving. Maybe there are dimensions of God's power that we can't even grasp yet.
Okay, so how does this connect to the divine kiss? How does the Ark fit into all of this?
Bentora thinks the Ark was a physical manifestation of the Zimzum, that spot where the natural and supernatural meet, Remember, it was said to occupy space and not occupy space at the same time.
Yeah, bridging two realities. And this goes back to Uzzah, right? Dying after touching the Ark.
Exactly. Usually people say he was punished, but Bentora suggests that maybe he was overwhelmed because he encountered this symptom directly. He wasn't ready.
So it's not just about being close to God physically. It's about being ready spiritually.
It's the difference between looking at a picture of the sun and staring right at it. One can be inspiring, the other can be blinding, even destructive.
That's a good analogy. So how do we prepare to enter God's presence, to experience the divine kiss without being, you know, overwhelmed?
Bentora talks about purification, cleansing our hearts and minds from anything that might separate us from God.
Okay.
He emphasizes repentance, turning away from sin, seeking God through prayer, worship, studying his word.
It's like we're training our souls to handle God's love, preparing for that union.
It's a lifelong process, a journey of drawing closer to God, surrendering to his love, allowing it to transform us. And it's not a journey we have to make alone, Bentora says. He really emphasizes community.
Oh, so it's not just me and God. It's about us supporting each other.
We're all in this together, part of the body of Christ, journeying towards that homecoming.
And speaking of homecoming, Bentora has another analogy to explain the divine kiss. He talks about coming home after a long time away.
Yeah, he describes that joy, you know, seeing familiar faces, feeling welcomed, finally resting.
And he connects that to heaven as our true home, where we'll be reunited with God, with everyone who's gone before us.
A place of joy and peace and love. Complete belonging.
Free from pain and suffering.
And that's where we'll finally experience the fullness of God's love.
The divine kiss. It's a beautiful, hopeful message. You know, it makes me think of all the times I've just felt homesick, longing for something more.
Maybe those feelings are echoes of our true longing, our desire for that homecoming, for the divine kiss.
The thing that makes us whole.
A longing that God put in each of us, and a longing he will fulfill.
This makes me wonder, how do we prepare for the divine kiss and cultivate that longing? Bentora has all these practical things, like spending time in nature.
Yeah, paying attention to the messages that creation is sending us.
And that Jewish practice we talked about, Yerdu, you know, humbling ourselves before creation.
It challenges us to see the world differently, find God in unexpected places.
Bentora has a whole chapter on how creation teaches us about the divine kiss. He really believes that everything in nature points to God's love.
It's a reminder we are surrounded by God's love.
If we just take the time to notice, he even suggests that our difficulties, the things we see as obstacles, those can actually help kindle God's love in us.
That's a comforting thought, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
That our struggles can actually draw us closer to God.
Yeah.
And then there's that story of Stephen, you know, the first Christian martyr. Even while being stoned to death, he saw God's glory. He saw Jesus at God's right hand. Bentora thinks that in that moment, Stephen received the divine kiss. He was so filled with God's love that the pain didn't even matter. He was already home.
Wow.
It's a powerful image that nothing, not even death, can separate us from God's love.
And that brings us right back to Bentora's message, that the divine kiss is about experiencing God's love so deeply that death, well, it just doesn't matter.
It's a perspective that could change how we live, you know, and how we approach our own death. If we're already embraced by God's love, if we're already experiencing little divine kisses, then death, it becomes less of an ending.
More of a transition.
Yeah, into something so much greater.
It's a beautiful, hopeful message. But, you know, Bentora really emphasizes the mystical. What about those who don't have those kinds of experiences?
That's true. He does focus on those really profound moments. But, you know, everyone's spiritual journey is different.
Yeah. Some people might have these amazing mystical experiences, while others might experience God's love in quieter ways.
And Bentora says that too, you know, that God speaks to us in so many different ways.
Through nature, through scripture, through other people.
It's a good reminder that God's presence isn't always loud and dramatic. Sometimes it's a whisper, a gentle nudge.
So we can still experience the divine hug, that sense of God's loving presence, even without the visions and the dramatic encounters.
Yeah. Bentora even tells a story about feeling God's dvekit while driving his disability bus.
Oh, wow.
Just a simple story, but it shows that God is with us all the time.
Yeah. No matter what we're doing.
This reminds us that preparing for the divine kiss, it's not about a checklist or achieving a certain level of, you know, spiritual ecstasy. It's about the relationship.
Building a deep connection with God that sustains us.
It's about seeing God everywhere.
Yeah.
Whether it's in a beautiful sunset or a quiet moment of prayer.
It's about trusting God, that he's with us, loving us, and preparing us.
For that ultimate homecoming.
Yeah.
And speaking of homecoming, Ventura uses several stories, like, to show the joy and celebration that awaits us when we leave this life. He talks about soldiers coming home from war, reuniting a pet with its owner.
Heartwarming.
He connects those stories to the rapture, that joyous reunion with Christ.
But, you know, he does say that not everyone feels that way about the rapture.
Oh, yeah. Some are even afraid of it.
Right. Afraid of what might happen during the tribulation. He even says that if he could choose, he'd rather stay behind during the rapture.
Really?
To minister to those who are left.
That's surprising, considering how much he talks about the bliss of the divine kiss.
It is. But it shows us something really important about Ventura's faith. It's not about escaping this world.
Yeah.
It's about serving God, loving others, making a difference, even if they're suffering.
So the divine kiss, it's not just about our own salvation. It's about being part of something much bigger.
It is. It's about joining God's mission, you know?
And it shows that even when things are hard, God's love is there, giving us strength and hope.
It's beautiful, but also challenging.
It is.
It's about embracing God's love, not just in the afterlife, but right now,
mm-hmm.
trusting that God is working everything for good.
Yeah.
Even the things that make no sense.
Just in surrendering to that love.
Yeah. Letting it change us. So we can be vessels of God's grace and mercy in this world.
Ventura ends his book with a call to action. He wants us to actively seek that divine kiss, to experience God's love in deeper ways.
Yeah. He reminds us, God's always reaching out, offering us glimpses of his glory, if we're open.
He talks about being grateful, you know, recognizing God's blessings.
Even the little things.
Yeah. And practicing the presence of God, seeking him everywhere.
All the time.
And being willing to step outside our comfort zones to risk discomfort, even suffering.
To serve God.
To love others.
It's a call to radical discipleship.
Yeah.
Living fully surrendered to God.
It's challenging, but man, it's inspiring. It reminds us that we're not just, you know, passive in all of this. We have a part to play.
We're participants in God's story.
Yes. And we have a choice. How we'll respond to his love, how we'll live our faith, how we'll prepare for the divine kiss.
And we make that choice every day.
Every moment.
And it's a choice with eternal consequences.
So what does all of this mean for you?
Yeah, what do you think?
Does it change how you think about death?
Yeah, does it make you want to seek God's love more?
Does it challenge you to live differently?
To live with more purpose.
Those are questions Ventura wants us to think about.
Yeah. And they're definitely worth thinking about.
Because the divine kiss, it's more than just an idea.
It's real.
And it's waiting for us all.
Yeah. And it's a reality that we can begin to experience even now.
Right now.
If we open our hearts to God's love.
You know, as we've been talking about this divine kiss, it's made me wonder, like, are there different, I don't know, levels to it?
That's interesting. Ventura does tell all these different stories.
Yeah.
From Lazarus to that missionary facing the firing squad.
Yeah.
It does seem like maybe he's showing a range of experiences.
Yeah, like you've got the missionary who was so overcome with God's love that he was almost bummed to be back on earth.
Yep.
And then Lazarus, it's more like peaceful sleep, temporary separation.
All right.
And then there's Uzzah, touching the ark, dying instantly.
Right, Ventura says he wasn't ready for that.
So maybe the divine kiss, like how strong it is, depends on us.
Maybe. Remember how Ventura talks about Divecit, clinging to God?
Yeah.
The more we practice that, the more we experience God here, the more prepared we are for that final embrace.
It's like that saying, heavenly minded, but not like escaping reality.
Exactly.
It's about bringing that awareness of God's love into everything we do.
Cultivating that racham love, you know, that perfect divine love.
Right.
That goes beyond what we can understand.
The more we experience it now, the smoother the transition when we die.
It could be.
So it's not about avoiding suffering or waiting for a mystical experience, but recognizing those little moments, those divine hugs that God gives us.
Not letting them change us.
Yeah.
Change how we see life and death and everything.
And maybe those moments, those times we feel connected to God, those are the divine kisses we get now.
It's possible. Little tastes of what's to come.
I like that. Ventura has given us a lot to think about. This whole idea of the divine kiss, it's not just a concept. It's a way of seeing death as a homecoming, emerging with that divine love. And it makes you think about how you're living right now.
It does. Are we seeking those divine hugs? Are we practicing Devak? Are we letting God's love in?
If creation whispers God's love, like Ventura says, what are we missing? What would it look like to really seek that divine hug every day?
It's a good question to ask ourselves. Maybe the next time you hear the birds singing or feel the sun on your face, those are invitations. to experience the divine kiss here and now and get ready for the one that's waiting.